In the book of Genesis, chapter 6, the account of Noah and the flood, we're going to be taking a look at two or three different chapters, 6, 10, a little bit, of, and then 10 and 11. I'm glad, very happy to be back with you. Of course, see faces of people that I've known for a lot of years. When I was here before, I didn't know Kathy was a doctor, but she was kind of, well, making fun of the way I was walking. And I actually got checked out when I got back home, and I had about a 5-inch tumor on my spine when I was here a little 3 years ago. And I've had that removed since then, so I've gone through some pretty serious health conditions since then. And I know that some of you have too, because I've kept in touch with Danny right well. If anything, it's a humbling effect to get older and to have problems that are very serious, and it makes you lean upon God even more. And it's even better to see folks that you have known in years gone by. It just makes everything a little sweeter. I've always enjoyed life, but it seems like every single day I just sit and look and just admire God's creation, and I'm so thankful for what He has given us. In Genesis chapter 6 and verse 5, and this is a Bible lesson that I've taught. I moved from southern Illinois off of a 3,700-head pig farm, which actually I sold it because my health got bad enough. Didn't know what was going wrong before I found out that I had that tumor. I actually sold that farm since I was here before. So I no longer have all those pigs to take care of. And I moved to Evansville, and I'm now serving as a minister in Evansville, Indiana. And not long ago, we were studying in the book of Genesis. Genesis 6 and verse 5 gives the condition, rather pitiful condition, of the earth at the time of Noah. It said, the Lord saw the wickedness of the earth, and it says that every thought and intent. So not only were they doing bad, but the thoughts and intents of the heart were only evil continually. Not only was the earth just completely overcome with sinners, but it was full of people that had very, very dirty minds. There are a lot of folks like that today. But we're far from being in the very terrible, pitiful condition that the earth was in at the time that Noah lived upon this earth. I have a Bible timeline here, and I realize that the flood could be right before 2500 BC. You see my little graphic there of an ark. It actually came out of one of the. It's a little graphic. It was in one of used for our daughters, actually, a little kids' class graphic. You see the ark floating there. So I realized that could be on either side of that 2500 BC. I realized that the dates are a little bit flexible there. But I think this little timeline gives you a good idea of something that I think is rather important. For one thing, do you notice Methuselah, of course, is the oldest man on record. In other words, there may have been somebody older, but the oldest one we have. And his death, he comes right up to the year of the flood. But what I think is especially significant, and something that a little timeline like this brings out, is that, do you notice, of course, Noah was 600 years old at the time of the flood. There's Noah. And he lived another 350 years. Now what's especially, to me, it's just fascinating about that is you have Noah, and I might just go ahead. Of course, the little star there is right below where Noah is. And look at this. There's Abraham. Of course, Abram, God changed his name to Abraham. Do you notice that Abraham lived during the time of Noah? And Shem, Noah's son, Shem, Ham, Japheth, Shem actually lived, well, if you look at that, Shem lived, he was on this earth longer than Abraham was. Why is that important? Because they would know what happened before the flood. If anybody's going to know about what was going on before the flood, it would be Noah and his sons, wouldn't it? And Abraham, where did he get his information? Well, he lived in the same part of the world they lived in. What I'm saying is, I think that if you're like me and like other folks I've talked to, you may think that there was 40 or 50 generations and what, how would they know exactly what happened? How would they know that much about it? Well, it's so removed in time that hearsay, it'd just be all cloudy and you don't know if it's a truth or a myth. Now, you're like me, you believe the Scriptures. You believe that what God says, if God says it, then you can read it, you believe it. But isn't it fascinating to know that a man, Abraham, the father of the faithful, lived at the same time that Noah did? It makes the world a smaller place. And it gives you, I think to me, it just gives you a little more security in knowing that men like Abraham, as they passed down the word, they didn't have to get it from Noah's great 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 grandson. They could talk to the man himself that was on that ark. They could know. And Noah, of course, you're looking at someone who goes back before the flood. Someone who would know what was happening and what kind of earth it was. It just ties them all together much more closely than one might think. Now, in there in Genesis, in the sixth chapter, as Noah builds the ark, there's always a question. Of course, we made the ark of gopher wood. We don't know exactly what that is. That's in Genesis 6, verse 14. Make an ark of gopher wood. Make rooms in the ark and cover it inside and out with pitch. And this is how you shall make it. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits. If indeed, and there's some question about this, but if a cubit is 18 inches and you're looking at a vessel that was 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, and 45 feet high. Of course, a cubit was the distance from man's elbow to the tip of his finger. And even if you and I were standing side by side, you'd see that it's not the same on all of us. But that gives you a pretty good idea of the size of the ark. Now, if you were to take the cubic feet, length, width, and height of that ark, the space there is equivalent to 560 cattle cars, train cars, cattle cars, livestock cars. 560. And always today, and especially in a day when there are more and more atheists all the time, and the evolutionary theory abounds, men are always saying, and I live in a college town, and I hear it frequently, well, you know, stories like that, it's ridiculous to think that you could get that many animals on an ark. Remember, as I point out to them, as a matter of fact, in the last 3 months, I have baptized a couple of people. One of them is a young lady, she's a college student who was raised as a Baptist, been a Baptist, I guess. Well, she's 21, she just turned 21. I think she said that she became a member of the church when she was 13 or 14. And then this last week, a young man who is Catholic. But you know, I'm surprised, even among religious people, how many people look at the account of the ark and just look at these as fables. So I had to talk to both of those people. We did, at least. We talked about Noah and the capacity of that ark. And I think one thing that's a little deceptive with people, they don't realize how big it was. 560, it would hold the same as 560 livestock cars. But also, they fail to take into consideration. Remember, each animal, of course, produced or multiplied after its own kind. We're not just exactly sure where that fits in. Well, you've got kingdom, phylum, subphylum, kingdom, plant, animal, kingdom, kingdom, phylum, subphylum, plant, order, family, genus, and species. And somewhere between, we know that species, that there are new species from time to time. But you're still having a calf mate with a cat of some sort. You're not making something different. You're not breeding a frog and an ostrich. You still have something within the cat family. And to make that a little simpler, it's like this. Anybody here have a chihuahua or a Pekingese, and if you don't, you've at least seen them. Nobody, anybody here actually have one? Yeah. I made fun of chihuahuas one time, and I thought I was going to get flogged. I might as well have been talking bad about the Lord, so I want to be very careful. Man, it's like insulting somebody's kid. But that's a dog. And then a St. Bernard. That's a pretty big dog, wouldn't you say? Doberman's been popular, some been in the news some. Different types of boxer bulldogs because of mainly because of biting people being hurt. They've been in the news over the last 15 years. And those are all dogs, and there would just have been one ancestor of all those animals. Yes, the wolf and the dog, and they would all have a common ancestor. There wouldn't have to be a Chihuahua and a St. Bernard both on the ark. Just one common ancestor, and all of these animals have come from one common ancestor. Now, I found that that's a little more difficult. You have a little more discussion, argumentation about that in the church at Evansville, because I'm talking to city people versus those who are raised on a farm. But farmers know that you can have, and you know that I've had a hog farm, I know quite a bit about this. You can have a gilt or a sow lay down and have pens, and she can be as white as can be. She can be just a pure white animal. And when she depends on what you have bred her to, she can have pigs, and she can put out a white pig and a black pig and a red pig, a spotted pig. I mean, you can have all different colors from that one white female. There is a common ancestor that God created, and all of these different breeds of dogs came from one common ancestor. That narrows it down. Noah didn't have to have the Pekingese and the Chihuahua and Doberman and the St. Bernard. He didn't have to have all of them on the ark. He had one common ancestor pair on that ark. Remember, 560 boxcars. We know that all of the different nationalities, even skin tones that we see among men. Mankind came from, well, first of all, from Adam and Eve. And we can get even closer to home because we know that God, with the flood, killed everybody off except Noah, his wife, his three sons, and their wives, so eight people. We all come from that one couple, Noah. We all come through them, all of us, no matter what. And just look at people. Look at the difference in people. I was telling Danny over on the way over here, thinking about this a little bit, about this the difference in the genetic makeup of mankind. And I was telling Danny that I have my middle daughter. In case some of you remember, I had one of the, they all have hair that's pretty curly. Now I know I don't have too much hair, and the very first thing Clinton did was walk up here and make fun of the fact that what I have left is gray. He said hi, and then laughed at my hair. Well, when I was a little younger, my hair was very, very curly, and I had a lot more of it. My little daughter has her hair is as blonde as can be, and it's very curly. But the thing about her that's a little different is I've got a 30-inch ensign. I'm 6 foot tall, but I've only got a 30-inch ensign. So my legs are very short. She has a 36-inch ensign. She stands beside me. We're the same height. We're the same height, but her legs come up to my waist. People are different. Some of them are black, and some of them are white, and yellow, and red. They're different, just like the different breeds of dogs. There's a big difference, but they have a common ancestor. And you didn't have to have all of these different breeds on the ark. You just had to have Noah, and of course, in his case, God not only allowed Noah and his wife, but Noah's sons and their wives. So there were eight people, not just two. But it gives you a better idea of the fact that would narrow it down considerably, how many people you put on that boxcar. And if you happen to be someone who believes there were dinosaurs, and I know a lot of my brethren don't, and that's okay, I do. You didn't have to put the biggest dinosaur that ever existed. Who knows what the common ancestor of the dinosaur, who knows what that was, what size it was. And besides that, who says God had to put a full-grown one on there? There's just there are some answers. Now, probably the kind of thing I'm talking to you about especially I like to talk about these things and teach these things, and not that you're old, though Clinton certainly looks old to me. But it's not that you're so old, but I'm going to tell you, I talk to young people about this because I want to say things that make sense to them, because as they're bombarded with evolutionary so-called facts, which are no more than theory, I want them to know that there are some answers that make sense. And I want them to remember a few of those answers. And realize that to be a Christian, you don't have to leave your brain at home and just have a blind faith. There are a lot of things I don't have an answer to that God hasn't revealed. And I'm willing. I don't know how He created the heavens and the earth. I believe He did. And I believe that after 6 days, He was finished and then He rested. I believe that. I don't know how He did that. And I probably won't until I stand before Him someday. There's a lot of things I don't know. But I think there are a lot of answers. There are a lot of answers to give our children. There are a lot of things we can tell them that make sense, so that as they are confronted with so-called intellectuals, they can remember some things that they've been taught that make sense. And even if they don't say anything, now, the young lady that was baptized not long ago, her family's very active, and so was she in the Baptist church. She graduated in the top of her high school class, and she's a very bright young lady, and so. And got a very humble, very good way about her, but she just almost immediately in college was having professors that were making statements that she was challenging a little bit. And I suggested to her that she'd probably be very careful about that, and there wasn't any use. Maybe there's times that you need to speak up, you feel like you're compromising your faith, but there's probably some other times that you probably just need to sit there, and you're in his class, Yeah, you'll have an opportunity to talk. I'm not wanting you to flunk out of your class just because I taught you some truth about the creation and the account of Noah and the ark. Well, I want to move on. It's now time for Noah. He's built the ark, and of course, wouldn't that be something to be living during that time? And Noah was 480 years old when God approached him. He's 600 years when he gets off the ark. So during that time he's building the ark, he's also preaching. And it's now time for him to get on the ark. You could feel like a failure as a preacher. You've been preaching for a long time, and the only people that are getting on that ark with you are your family. Folks haven't listened. It's now time for Noah to get on the ark, which he has been working so hard to prepare for many years. He is instructed to take along clean animals or clean beasts by sevens, and all others just in pairs. In 7 days, the 40-day and 40-night flood will begin. Noah, of course, followed all the instructions the Lord had given him. Noah was 600 years old at the beginning of the flood. Noah, his wife, and their sons, and their wives entered the safety of the ark. The fountains of the deep, not just the rains from above, but the fountains of the deep and the windows of heaven were opened up, and a tremendous flood of water resulted. The waters increased and lifted up the ark, and it began to float above the earth. All the high hills that were under the whole heaven were covered. Now as a result, all flesh that moved upon the earth, of course, died. Noah only remained, and those who were with him on the ark. And then the waters prevailed, or stayed where they were, at that very high level, for another 150 days before they started to recede, or to go down. Genesis 7 and verse 1, the Lord said unto Noah, go into the ark, you and your whole family, because I have found you righteous in this generation. We see in the New Testament, which makes reference back to Noah, it says, by faith. Faith is more than just mental assent. It's more than just a mental activity called belief. By faith, Noah, he believed God, but having been warned by God of things not yet seen, he moved with fear. He prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness, which is according to faith. Noah did what God told him to do. Even though it seemed like, it was, no doubt, at the very least, seemed like a rather extreme measure, he did it anyway. He's a man of faith. Noah wasn't a robot. He was a man. Noah must have been tempted in any way in those evil days. Yet, he was faithful. His faithfulness was observed by the God of heaven. And of course, then he was rewarded for what he did. What a great man he was. 2 Peter 2:5, God did not spare the old world. Of course, we're talking about the world before the flood. But he saved Noah, the eighth one, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly. Noah not only was an ark builder, but he was a preacher of righteousness during that time. And God saw him. And God was with him. And God has given us. It doesn't matter how many wicked people you're around. You may be lucky enough to, maybe you're a farmer, and by living on a farm, you've managed to isolate yourself from wickedness. Probably people within this crowd that also work in factories, and you probably have to listen to people who have potty mouths, as we used to call to our daughters. People that can't seem to utter a complete sentence without cursing. People who use sexual filth, innuendos, and dirty jokes as a way of life. Noah lived in that kind of a world. But he remained faithful to God. And God has given you and I all we need to be successful in living godly lives. We can be like Noah. In Genesis 7, verse 2, you shall take with you every clean animal by sevens. Of course, you have to have a few more of them because they ended up being the sacrifices. And take two of the animals that are not clean, male and female. This is the first mention in the Scriptures of clean animals. And we do not know exactly what God may have revealed to the patriarchs, of which Noah would be a patriarch, the same as Abraham later. God revealing His message to family heads, like He did through communicating with Adam in the garden. We don't know exactly what He had said about it, but we're going to find out in a moment what He wants. We have been given information about how the clean animals were to be used by Noah in Genesis 8 and verse 20. They were used for sacrifices to God. And that's the first thing Noah did when he came down off of the ark, was he worshipped the God of heaven. He never forgot God, and he worshipped God. Noah did all, he did according to all That's important. He obeyed God. He did all. He wasn't a sinless man, but he did according to all that the Lord had commanded him. You and I can't pick and choose what we obey. We, like Noah, need to do the best we can to follow God, period. Whether we like it or not. The fact that Noah and his family were the only ones that obeyed God says a lot. Makes these remarks about Noah, his faithfulness, the obedience of Noah, even more remarkable. Want to have a hero? Let it be someone like Noah. Doesn't have to be a rock star or a pro football player. It doesn't need to be. What a great man. What a great man. Noah lived by faith. We've already looked at that verse there. In the 600th year of Noah's life, on the seventh day, the second month, on that day, all the springs of the great deep burst forth. All the springs of the great deep burst forth. And the floodgates of the heavens were opened. So, what water was coming, where was water coming from? Not just, of course, when you say the floodgates of heaven were open, you know that's talking about a torrential downpour of rain, right? But what about the springs of the great deep? So the water didn't come just from above, did it? No. Not at all. This was not some ordinary act. This wasn't just a heart of rain. This was a miraculous judgment from God upon evil. Water came up from below the earth's surface, and of course, torrential rains came from above. Do you remember a few years ago when Mount St. Helens, when the volcano erupted? It's been a while, but it was on the news every day. I mean, something like that is just almost unfathomable. It's just, you know, how can this happen? And I've talked with people who were there right before. They'd seen it before, and they were there within the first year after the destruction. But you really just have to see it to believe it. How much damage can be done? It's just almost beyond comprehension. Well, remember, Genesis 7 and verse 11, the verse we read just a moment ago. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the seventh day of the month, on the same day, all the fountains of the great deep burst open, and the floodgates of the skies were open. Well, what happens when the fountains of the deep burst open, as recorded in Genesis? And I'm going to tie this together in a moment with the great volcano like at Mount St. Helens. This is a map. This is a map, of course, of the world today. And can you see? Now, I'm not colorblind, but close to it. So my colors, if I say so. Sometimes I'll mention a color. The young people will. They know me. They'll laugh because I'll be that far off. But I don't know. It looks like, purple or lavender or something. It's. But you see the lines. You see these lines, and then over here off the east coast. Of course, here's the United States. Here's off the east coast. These are all lines that show volcanic activity. And of course, you've got all kinds of different devices to measure these kinds of things that we map out. I mean, scientists know where the rivers under the oceans are today. Of course, if you're going to navigate the oceans, you better be aware of them. They're supposed to have descriptions. But especially when you see a lot of that purple or lavender color, that shows a part of the world where volcanic activity is going on even today. And just think of all of the destruction of something like Mount St. Helens, and just think about the earth just breaking up from below. Now, God could have done this however He wanted to, but I think it's very believable that it was just exactly something like this that happened. The earth just from below, just things just came up, and the destructive power was just nearly unbelievable what was happening. Without the grace of God being with Noah, even though he was on a vessel that God Himself had instructed him to build and told him how to build it, even then I can see the grace of God working, keeping him alive on that vessel. Remember the great tsunami in 2004? Do you remember that there were over 300,000 people killed with that Indian Ocean tsunami? You remember what that was? That was a volcano coming from below. Those waters of the ocean, that those great tidal waves that came right up on the land killed all those people. That was because of what came from beneath. It's not hard for me to believe that this is exactly the kind of thing that happened in the time of Noah. God's awesome powers just demonstrated in things like this. I off of the internet downloaded the graphic of the earth, and you see the little dark circle that's out on the, it's kind of the crust of the perimeter there, 3 miles thick. Well, anyway, you can see, you get the idea. The geologists, there's just different layers made up of different material. What's the earth? The further you in go, when you get in, it's just molten. The cool earth crust just floats on a molten mass. And that, when a volcano comes forth, it's all that molten stuff that's down in here making its way out, is what it is. What was interesting about this, and really it's what I was looking up, because I knew that there would probably be toxic things that are very toxic down there in below the surface of the earth. And see there, oxides, oxygen. What happens whenever the earth starts to crack and those types of things are allowed to make it to the earth? What happens whenever you have a flame around oxygen? Again, notice here, oxygen and sulfur. Now what's going to happen? Anybody here ever smelled sulfur? Yeah, some of you have. Would you like for your wife to have a special perfume made out of stuff? It's awful, isn't it? I mean, it does smell worse than a rotten egg. And just imagine that kind of stuff being below the surface of the earth, and yet it is. Oxygen, the star right above that star there at the bottom right hand of the screen, oxygen and sulfur start cracking the surface and letting the molten rock that's below there come to the surface. It's very destructive. There's no wonder. I have very little doubt in my mind that the difference in the conditions upon the earth as far as climate are much different than they were before the flood. I have very little doubt that things were a lot different. Things changed at that point. They changed dramatically. Not for the better. The flood was a catastrophic event, only matched in its awesome magnitude by the creation itself. All God had to do was speak the word. I know that. I don't know whether He used natural means or not. When I see what has happened through nature, things like a tsunami, isn't it almost unbelievable that 300,000 people were killed And yet we'd have a great day coming when the earth is going to be destroyed with fire that's going to make that look like a walk in the park. That really made what happened in the day of Noah. What happened with Noah in his time was so much more severe than the earthquake leading to the big tidal wave called a tsunami that killed 300,000. Because the whole earth was inundated, and it wasn't just in one part of the world, but waters were breaking forth from the deep like the Indian Ocean and the tsunami, but all over the earth. What an event. Yeah, my time up. Well, you should have kicked me or something. I'm sorry. Our time is up. Yeah, I just sit down.